Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going.
Thank you for being here. I have some good news for you. More people are going to make more money in the next few years than have been made in all of human history. In the year...
The Kabbalion is a study of the Hermetic philosophy of ancient Egypt and Greece, written by three initiates. The Kabbalion contains the seven Hermetic principles, which I will cover in seven videos. These secret doctrines, based upon world-old Hermetic teachings, help us to understand the nature of reality and the nature of self. It's important that us as light bringers understand these teachings, and not just those who would seek to control us. Hence, I give you my understanding of them.
Greetings, my dears, in love and light. I'm Nikki Sutton.
Radhe Radhe Swamiji, my question is, how can we understand law of karma in Hinduism?
Law of karma. There are certain man-made laws and there are certain universal laws, not created by man but still existing. The traffic laws, the laws of IRS, the laws of the state, they are all man-made. If you violate them, you can be punished. And then there are the universal laws of God, like the laws of motion. Newton discovered some of them when he said an object at rest or at motion will continue in that state unless acted upon by an external force. You studied that, right? So these are the physical laws. And then there are the subtle divine laws that control existence. And one of them is the law of karma. This law of karma is very much like the law of action and reaction, or cause and effect. It says that every cause will lead to an effect. When this is applied to our thoughts, our actions, our works, that is the law of karma. Karma pradhan vishva kari rakha jo jas karai so tas phalu chakha. The law of karma says, whatever you do will have consequences. So be careful about your every action, about your every thought. The law of karma also explains why you are responsible for where you are in life. Very often people have this tendency of playing the blame game. You know, it's all my parents' fault that I'm not so successful. It's the fault of society. It's the fault of God. It's the fault of the government. It's so easy to fall into this blaming mode. But the law of karma says no. You took choices all through your journey in life. And the consequences of all those choices is that you find yourself in a particular situation today. So the law of karma tells us it is our responsibility. And that is why we now have the onus. If I am responsible for where I find myself today, then it gives me hope. If I am not satisfied with my state, all I need to do is to change my actions and to change my thoughts, and I'll find myself in a better place tomorrow. So the law of karma helps bring out the best in people. That is the reason why God has it in place. Just like, for example, now, if you play well and your team wins, that is an incentive to play even better next time. But if the scores and results have no correlation with how you played, then everybody will be demotivated. Forget it. It really doesn't matter. That is why later on when you grow up and go into the corporate world, you will find that there's a performance appraisal system. Your boss will evaluate your performance and help you in your promotion. Why is that performance appraisal system there? Because people need to learn this fundamental principle that to rise, you have to work, think and do better. So on the universal level, this is the law of karma that God has in place. The law of karma will also punish. Somebody came to a Hindu acharya and said, Swamiji, you know, I'm so miserable. My family situation is so awful. My health is bad. I lost my job. My house got burned. Why did God do this to me? So the acharya said, that's because you are a rascal and you did many sins in past lives. Now that apparently is a very harsh answer. I'm a rascal and I did many sins. But it opened that guy's eyes that if I am in a terrible mess, it was my karmas from this life and past life. And if I wish to improve my lot, I need to improve my karmas. So this, at the subtle level, the law of cause and effect is the law of karma. It exists in various forms in other religious traditions as well. So the Bible says, as you sow, that shall you also reap. In the Sikh Dharma, the Buddhist Dharma, the Jain Dharma, the law of karma also exists. And as the Hindu philosophy is getting more and more prominence and gaining influence, these words are getting adopted in the English language. So somebody once told me at breakfast, Swamiji, would you like to try almond milk? I said, let me check the box. And the box said, good karma proteins. So I said, look, this is proof that mainstream has now adopted the word karma. They're saying meat is bad karma proteins and almonds is good karma proteins. So in brief, that is the law of karma.
Cause and effect. At Grammar Songs by Melissa, what is cause and effect? More importantly, how can understanding cause and effect make me a better reader? Let's get started. Cause and effect is a relationship between events or things where one is the result of the other or others. What? Huh? That does sound a little confusing, so let me explain. The cause is the reason for a situation or change. The cause is why something happens. The effect is the result or the consequence. The effect is the outcome or conclusion. What happened? I'm confused. I don't get it. Maybe it will help if I show you. The relationship of cause and effect happens in situations in real life every day when we try to figure out what happened and why. You're giving me a ticket. You were speeding. You missed 8 words on your spelling test. I forgot to study. This bill is expensive. You ordered everything on the menu. The cookies are burning. I forgot to set the timer. In a cause and effect relationship, it's important to understand which event is the cause and which is the effect. The cause always, always, always happens first or before the effect. For example, his speeding was the cause of getting the ticket. Getting the ticket could not cause him to speed. Speeding is the cause, receiving the ticket is the effect. Likewise, forgetting to study is the cause of missing 8 words on a spelling test. Missing 8 words wouldn't cause him to forget to study. Forgetting to study is the cause. Missing 8 words is the effect. Because is a great word to use to figure out which is the cause and which is the effect. It even has the word cause within it. Because he was speeding, he got the ticket. Because he didn't study, he missed 8 words on his spelling test. Because he ordered everything on the menu, his bill was expensive, yes. And because she forgot to set the timer, the cookies were burning. Exactly. So the cause always happens before the effect. Always. And the effect is the result. Yes. So how does this help me when I read? You are asking an excellent question. Identifying cause and effect when you read is important because it helps you to better understand what happened and why it happened. There are a number of signal words a reader can use to help boost understanding. Signal words are words an author may use to indicate the relationship between two ideas, in this case, cause and effect. Some common signal words for cause are because, since, due to, if, and when. Some common signal words for effect are so, therefore, as a result, consequently, thus, and then. Authors may use these words and others to help the reader identify a cause and effect relationship, but sometimes authors don't use signal words at all. The important thing to remember is that the cause is the event or thing that makes the effect happen. Maybe we should practice! That is a really great idea. Let's read a short story together and look for the cause and effect relationships. Remember, the cause is the reason why something happens. Some signal words for cause are because, since, due to, if, and when. The effect is the result. Some signal words for effect are so, therefore, as a result, consequently, thus, and then. Here we go. Tara was having an awful day. She didn't wake up on time because she forgot to set her alarm clock. Since she didn't wake up to let the dog out, he made a mess on the floor. She forgot to put her math book in her backpack, so she didn't have her homework. When it was time for lunch, Tara remembered her lunchbox was on the counter in the kitchen. She went to band class, thus realizing her flute was still in her bedroom where she had practiced the night before. Tara got on the bus to go home. Her friend Keisha told her jokes to make her smile. As a result, by the time she got home, Tara felt much better. Let's reread this story to look for cause and effect. We can look for signal words along the way. Tara was having an awful day. She didn't wake up on time because she forgot to set her alarm clock. Do you see a signal word that can help us? I see because. Very good. The word because indicates a cause. Let's highlight the cause in red and the effect in yellow. because she forgot to set her alarm clock, she didn't wake up on time. And forgetting to set the alarm clock happened first in her life. It tells why she didn't wake up on time. Very good. Let's keep reading. Since she didn't wake up to let the dog out, he made a mess on the floor. Do you see a signal word that can help us? I see sense. You're right. Sense is another word that indicates a cause. Since she didn't wake up to let the dog out, he made a mess on the floor. And not waking up on time caused the dog to make a mess on the floor. The dog making a mess was the result or effect. Excellent. Let's read some more. She forgot to put her math book in her backpack, so she didn't have her homework. I see the word so. Wow, you certainly are getting good at looking for signal words. So is a signal word that can indicate an effect. She forgot to put her math book in her backpack, so she didn't have her homework. Forgetting to put her math book in her backpack caused the effect of not having her homework. Yes. I'm worried about Tara. Is her day ever going to get better? Let's keep reading to find out. When it was time for lunch, Tara remembered her lunchbox was on the counter in the kitchen. When could be a signal word for a cause? Yes, it can. When it was time for lunch, Tara remembered her lunchbox was on the counter in the kitchen. The fact that it was time for lunch caused Tara to remember her lunchbox. Exactly. Let's see what happens next. She went to band class, thus realizing her flute was still in her bedroom where she had practiced the night before. Thus can be a signal word for an effect. Great job. She went to band class, thus realizing her flute was still in her bedroom where she had practiced the night before. Going to band class caused Tara to realize her flute was still in her bedroom. Yes. Poor Tara. Will her day get better? Well, let's keep reading. Tara got on the bus to go home. I don't see any signal words. Okay, let's keep reading. Her friend Keisha told her jokes to make her smile. As a result, by the time she got home, Tara felt much better. As a result can indicate an effect. Very good. So if as a result, by the time she got home, Tara felt much better is the effect, where is the cause? Well, what caused Tara to feel much better? Her friend Keisha told her jokes to make her smile. Yes, Keisha's jokes caused the effect of Tara feeling much better. Great job, you two! So remember, cause and effect is a relationship between events or things where one is the result of the other or others. The cause is the reason for a situation or change. The cause is why something happens. And the effect is the result. The effect is what happened. Some signal words for cause are because, since, due to, if, and when. And some signal words for effect are so, therefore, as a result, consequently, thus, and then. Hooray! You did a great job learning about cause and effect. Thank you for joining me at Grammar Songs by Melissa. Enjoy other related videos at GrammarSongs.com.
The prosecution in Derek Chauvin's murder trial is strongly attacking the defense argument that the fired police officer is not what killed George Floyd. Prosecutors called three medical experts to lay out exactly what they say led to Floyd's death in Minneapolis. And as Jamie Yucas reports, all of them dismissed the defense theory of a drug overdose. We do have to warn you that this testimony may be hard to listen to.
The healthy person subjected to what Mr. Floyd was subjected to would have died.
Dr. Martin Tobin, who has written what is considered the Bible of textbooks on lung function, testified that George Floyd died due to the weight on his neck and back, leaving no room for his lungs to expand.
Half of his body weight plus half his gear weight is coming down. That's 91.5 pounds is coming down directly on Mr. Floyd's neck. The cause of death is a low level of oxygen that caused the brain damage and caused the heart to stop.
In a video so disturbing we are not airing it, Tobin showed in slow motion Floyd taking his last breath.
When he last take a breath, the knee remains on the neck for another 3 minutes and 27 seconds. After there's no pulse, the knee remains on the neck for another 2 minutes and 44 seconds.
The defense argues that the drugs in Floyd's system, as well as his underlying health conditions, led to his death. But Tobin was clear throughout.
If somebody is suffering from a fentanyl overdose, you would see a depression in the respiratory system.
Yes.
Did you see any depression in Mr. Floyd's ability to breathe whatsoever before he went unconscious?
No, absolutely not.
Thursday's last witness, Dr. William Smock, backed up Dr. Tobin's assessment.
Mr. Floyd died from positional asphyxia, which is a fancy way of saying he died because he had no oxygen left in his body.
Did you consider other possibilities as causes that you evaluated and dismissed as unlikely?
Absolutely.
Joe Tamburino is a Minnesota criminal defense attorney who is not affiliated with the case.
If you were defending Derek Chauvin, would you tell him to testify?
At this point, I would tell him to testify because there's been such damning information that's gone in. Really, what? Why not?
The city's chief medical examiner is expected to testify today. He ruled Floyd's death as a homicide and the cause as cardiac arrest complicated by restraint and neck compression. That means the defense can make a case that Chauvin complicated Floyd's death but did not actually cause it. Anthony?
Jamie, thank you.
And today's podcast is titled George Floyd, The Law of Cause and Effect. George Floyd, The Law of Cause and Effect. We're going to take a look at the law of cause and effect with not only George Floyd, but Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, and Chauvin as well. So we're going to play this next clip, and then we'll get into take a look at the law of cause and effect and what happened that day George Floyd met his demise.
The murder trial of Derek Chauvin is on day 9 of witness testimony. The former Minneapolis police officer is accused of killing George Floyd after kneeling on his neck for more than 9 minutes last May. Today, the jury heard from a medical expert who testified as to what precisely led to Floyd's death, Dr. Martin Tobin, a pulmonologist who specializes in how people breathe. He testified Floyd died from a low level of oxygen that caused damage to his brain and led to an arrhythmia that caused his heart to stop. Dr. Tobin says it happened because of a low level of oxygen caused by shallow breathing. Prosecutors asked Dr. Tobin for the cause of this shallow breathing.
What happened in the case of Mr. Floyd that relates to the shallow breathing that resulted in his low oxygen?
So there are a number of forces that led to that the size of his breath became so small. And so there are a series of forces higher up that are leading to that. And the main forces that are going to lead to the shallow breath are going to be that he's turned prone on the street, that he has the handcuffs in place combined with the street, and then that he has a knee on his neck, and then that he has a knee on his back and on his side. All of these four forces are ultimately going to result in the low tidal volume, which gives you the shallow breaths that we saw here.
Kirk Burkhalter is a professor at New York Law School and a former New York Police Department detective. He joins me from New York City. Kirk, welcome. Great to have you with us. So what is the prosecution's goal in bringing forth this particular medical expert? Did we learn anything specific today about Floyd's cause of death that can be directly linked to Chauvin's actions?
Well, Tanya, this very much is the meat of the prosecution's case. So initially, we've seen a lot of testimony and a lot of emotional testimony about the use of force and the bystander testimony and so forth. However, the prosecution must prove causation. There are two hurdles the defense must over, or rather two things the prosecution must prove, that Derek Chauvin was not justified in the use of force. And given the use of force and the fact that he was not justified, he caused the death of George Floyd, meaning he was a substantial cause. So here, the doctor's testifying basically that, yes, the actions that Derek Chauvin took were a substantial cause. He flat out said that George Floyd died because of this lack of oxygen, and the lack of oxygen was caused by the knee to the neck of George Floyd. And he went through great detail about the amount of time due to that lack of oxygen and what would be the result. He also testified about the fact that when and if someone can speak, even if they are lacking oxygen. So the fact that it takes, you can speak if you have oxygen inside your body. However, it takes one has to inhale more oxygen to continue to speak. And this rebuts that proposition that the defense has set forth, that because George Floyd was speaking, screaming for his life or pleading for his life, he was not losing oxygen.
Absolutely. And, you know, the prosecution spent considerable time discussing Dr. Tobin's credentials and making clear that he was not paid and has never been involved in a criminal trial. Why does the state believe that that's an important piece of information for the jury to hear?
Oh, it's very critical because this trial is likely to come down to a battle, what we call a battle of the experts. So the defense certainly will have experts that they have paid to be present. They will also utilize expertise that they did not pay, for instance, the coroner for this jurisdiction. So it's important for the prosecution to show that this person was not paid to be here, and therefore they would not have an improper motive or a motive just to please the prosecution, you know, the theory being that this person was objective, and therefore the jury can actually rely on the information that he's providing. But make no mistake about it, this case is probably going to turn on, one, the cause of death factor, and two, which experts the jury chooses to believe.
And we did hear Dr. Tobin give a very detailed explanation of his determination into how George Floyd died. I'm going to play one example from his testimony, and we do want to warn our viewers who haven't been watching the trial closely. Some of these details are graphic. Let's listen.
You see his knuckle against the tire. And to most people, this doesn't look terribly significant, but to a physiologist, this is extraordinarily significant, because this tells you that he has used up his resources and he is now literally trying to breathe with his fingers and knuckles. Because when you begin to breathe, you begin to breathe with your rib cage and your diaphragm. The next thing you recruit after that is your sternomastoid muscle, which is the big muscle in your neck. And then when those are wasted up, then you're relying on these types of muscles, like your fingers, to try and stabilize your whole right side.
It's just devastating to hear that sort of testimony. And when you look at the big picture, you know, how important is it for the jury to hear these specific details, these tiny little details, which, you know, give you a full picture as to what George Floyd was experiencing in those crucial 9 minutes? How do these medical distinctions by the doctor help the prosecution's case?
Well, this is huge because the jury is going to have access to the video and all other evidence. And this is pointing, giving the jury direction as to what aspects of the video they should pay attention to. Obviously, they should pay attention to all the bystander information video and the what Chauvin did. However, the doctor pointing out these intricate facts, what tends to lead him to believe that someone is struggling for air, the usage of the fingers. You know, if you think about if you've ever been confined in any way, shape, or form, or you were stuck somewhere and you start gyrating with your body, you start using everything. So this is very relatable for the jury. However, the doctor's putting it in extremely discreet scientific terms. So he's a very credible witness because he provided his credentials. He provided the fact that he wasn't being paid. And he's able to methodically go through this video and point out to the jury each and every piece that indicates that at some point while George Floyd was confined and restrained, that he was grasping for air. And then if we move on further, it was likely that he was asphyxiated well before Derek Chauvin released his knee from his neck. So he's a critical witness, very credible. I think the prosecution is doing a nice job here with him.
And Dr. Tobin often used his hands to sort of describe what was happening to George Floyd. And at one point, the defense objected, and the judge did tell the jurors they did not have to mimic the doctor's movements. What do you make of the objection, and why do you think the judge issued that warning?
Well, that was very interesting. So if I'm the defense, I'm going to object also. And it kind of shows that the defense believes that this doctor is very credible and the jury is believing him. After all, many people, when you use your hands to emphasize a particular point, that's much more powerful than when you remain static. And certainly, you know, at some points he pointed to his neck where George Floyd was, where he had the knee and so forth. So that was huge. And by the judge mentioned, okay, the jury does not have to pay attention to that. However, it's very difficult sometimes to unring the bell. The damage was already done. I'm sure that had some influence on the jury. And once again, I hate to constantly repeat myself, but it added to his credibility. You know, it's like he's teaching a class, and the jury are his students, and they are a captive audience.
But wouldn't he be doing his job there if he's trying to describe the physiology of what's happening in a person's body as they are essentially suffocating? Wouldn't that be okay to show the physicality of it because that's what he's trying to describe? Why on a legal basis would there be any grounds for an objection to that?
So the only legal basis I can think of is that well, for one, first of all, if you are a defense attorney and there's a witness on the stand and that witness is hurting your case, you object. You find a way to object. You find a manner to kind of stop the bleeding. Second, the main argument I would think of is that this would be unduly prejudicial. So his mimicking the movements, in other words, the jury already has a video, so they don't need someone to come in and reenact the video physically. They can simply opine on what they see. So I would think that would be the basis of the objection, that was unduly prejudicial. The judge made this ruling that, you know, the jury could choose to ignore it. They are not bound to ignore it. But in a way, that ruling is not necessary because juries are allowed to agree with information, to disagree with information, to challenge the veracity of information. They have that choice already. So the judge was merely stating what they can do already. So in effect, that limiting ruling wasn't necessary.
And we did see yesterday the defense try to use or tie Floyd's alleged drug use to his death. Dr. Tobin said that even a fully healthy person would have died under similar circumstances. But do you expect the defense to keep that strategy up with the prosecution's medical experts?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the defense has to, well, they don't have to prove. They simply have to sow a reasonable doubt in the jury that Derek Chauvin was the substantial cause of death. And they're going to do that by constantly hammering home this prior drug usage and the fact that drugs were in the car and that in some way, shape, or form, this contributed to the death of George Floyd in a substantial factor, less than the knee on the neck. So this is very much the crux of the defense's case to rebut the evidence for causation. And the only way they can rebut that evidence is by presenting this drug usage. The problem here is it comes dangerously close to putting the victim on trial. George Floyd is A, not on trial, and B, he's not on trial for using drugs at some point in the past. So the defense does run the risk of kind of overusing this tactic. At some point, the jury will perhaps it becomes white noise, right? And the jury's heard it over and over, and they'll disregard it and just look at the video and just look at what everyone else in the country has seen.
All right. Well, Professor Kirk Burkhalter of New York Law School, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your insight.
My pleasure.
All right. Today's podcast is titled George Floyd, The Law of Cause and Effect. So we're going to take a look at the law of cause and effect as applied to George Floyd, the individual, Derek Chauvin, the individual, also, Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, and Eric Gardner. Now, I need to make some distinctions here when we're using the word law. They're called natural laws of the universe. These are principles that man cannot interpret or change or alter in any way, shape, or form. Example, if you wet your finger, or maybe you don't even have to wet your finger, and stick it in an electric socket, more than likely you're going to get shocked. That's because the law of electricity is it. Now, the law of electricity, it's impersonal. It's totally impersonal. When it shocked you, it didn't have any malice or nothing like that, no revenge or nothing like that. But if you're not aware of the law of electricity and how impersonal it is, because the law of electricity can light up a house, run a car, it can cool off a house. I mean, it can help cool off a house with, you know, other apparatuses, or warm up a house. It can cook meals. The law of electricity, it's totally impersonal. There's no man can, a panel of judges can interpret it in different ways. All right? The law of gravity. If you're out in, what do you call that place in Arizona, the Grand Canyon, or any place that's got a cliff or two, and you're walking straight, and then all of a sudden there's no ground beneath you, you're not going to keep on walking. The law of gravity is going to kick, and you're going to go south. Hopefully you have a parachute on. I don't think man's learned how to fly without aid yet. Law of gravity, no man, no politician can amend it, interpret it. It is what it is. I mean, I just gave you an example of the law of gravity on Earth. Of course, if you go into outer space, go to the moon, other planets, because gravity's still there, but, you know, it affects things differently. All right. Now, when it comes to man-made law, you can have black letter law, and two people can read the same, the black letter law, and in the case of a George Floyd, or the Chauvin case, they can interpret it totally different, including the judges that are involved, including the juries that are involved. A good example would be, or a couple of good examples, Rodney King, in his first state, the trial involving Rodney King, when he got a beat down by 27 police officers. First thing, and there's video of this, still on YouTube. He got his ass kicked by 27 police officers. Only two got charged. Man-made law subject to man's political interpretation. And they got off. What was it, four policemen? It's been a while. But anyway, there was a riot. So it was an election year. George Bush won, said, "No, well, you know, let's bump this up to see if there are any civil rights. And they made it a federal case, and two eventually got convicted. Now that's man's law. That's interpreted that subject to human politics in this case. Another case, about 2-3 years ago, Freddie Graham, Baltimore, the coroner, ruled that Freddie Gray's death was a result of a homicide. Homicide means that the death occurred at the hands or was caused by another human being. He wasn't in the wilds of Alaska, so he wasn't mauled by a bear. Now, the district attorney in Baltimore charged several policemen, and every one of those policemen got off. There was no conviction of any of those police officers or any human being in the Freddie Gray case. Although the coroner, a city employee, just like the policeman, said somebody, this guy's death. But that's man's law. But let's take a look, and let's go with the George Floyd thing, because we want to take a look at him first. With the law of cause and effect of what might have George Floyd done to not end up in the situation that he ended up in. Now, we know he woke up that morning, or whenever he woke up during the day, and according to several reports that he was high on whatever. I don't have the toxicology report in front of me, but he was high on something. Now, once again, cause and effect. If I get up and drink too much or pop too many pills and decide to go out, well, first thing, cause an effect on your body. Alcohol and drugs do have an effect on the body. Drink too much, that's the cause, the effect, getting drunk. Take too many pills, that's the cause, the effect, high, and then you're not in control of your not aware, you might not be aware of your surroundings, might not be aware of your actions or whatever. However, if you take a drink or two or three, more than you can, some people can't handle their liquor, and then you decide to go outside of the house, okay, you go outside of the house, and let's say, well, anything can happen. You can get into an argument with somebody. You can get in a fight with somebody. I mean, you can start a whole lot of shit. And you know what? You might get away with it. You might come back home unscathed. However, in the case of George Floyd, now, the law of cause and effect, which is impersonal, and the reason why I'm putting this podcast out here today like this live stream, is particularly for black men, and I'm a black male, we have to, on a critical mass basis, overall on a critical mass basis, the average black male is okay. Okay. I'm speaking for the youngins or the ones that are the old fools or whatever in between. Okay. We have to, the law of cause and effect is something that we can have control over, because we make our causes. And in a lot of cases, if we consciously make the right causes, we're going to get the right and positive effects and stay alive. Because that's really the directive. And our DNA for every creature on the planet is to stay. You wake up, The primary, if whether you're a cockroach or a human being or a jackrabbit or a deer, an antelope, gorilla, the primary, if you wake up, your primary directive is to stay alive. So, and I want to put this out here because, in my opinion, and I'm just one person, too many black folk and white liberals do. They're looking at the effect and treating the effect as the cause. What could George, if you're going to get drunk, fine. If you're going to get high, fine. Primary directive, to stay alive. He could have chose to stay in the house. Don't get nobody's way. Stay out of the public's way, and you're all right. Well, he got in his car, or SUV, went to the store, and allegedly passed a $20 bill. And from what one of the witnesses said, that he didn't believe that Floyd knew that it was a counterfeit bill. And I can believe that because I've gotten change back from, you know, a 7-Eleven or something like that. And at least on two occasions, by the time I discovered it, I was out of the store and, days had passed and whatever. So there's nothing I can do. It was like $1 bills. But in any event, so he went to the store. And then he went, paid for whatever, and then the clerk sensed that this was a counterfeit bill. Okay. And Floyd hadn't driven off yet. And then they asked him, would he come back into the store? See, there's a whole bunch of causes in here. So when he didn't go back to the store, then, once again, cause and effect, then the clerk called, I think his supervisor, and they called the police. Now, up until the time that the police was called, George Floyd, in my opinion, although he allegedly could have been inebriated, he had control of the situation. Due to the fact that he was inebriated, and you're out in public, and you're interacting with other people, you risk a strong possibility when you're not on your game through the law of cause and effect, because it's like tennis. I make the calls, you're serving. Now what's going to come back at you? And what came back at him was four policemen. He didn't have any control at that point. So I'm not cutting it, chopping any slack now, because we can go cause and effect on him too. But the thing is, I would not be surprised if Charvin beat the case, because we're dealing with, see, it goes to the jury. And those 12 people can see things differently. They might all agree. Just like Rodney King, it was, in my opinion, and a lot of other people's opinion, it was a clear-cut, open-shut case that on the state trial with the Rodney King beatdown, and that's why there were riots. That's man-made law. So the same thing could happen to Joy. I don't know. But I'm speaking about this morning, what can we do as individuals, particularly black men and black women, what can we do using the law of cause and effect where we're not placed at the mercy of somebody else when they can make the causes? Opinion. just sanitizing it, not judging. I didn't know George Floyd. I might drink something alcoholic once a year, or once every 18, almost 2 years. I'm not a drinker. The last time I had too much to drink was probably 20 years ago, in Barbados. But what I did that day, or that evening, is because I wasn't driving, I got driven back to where I was staying, went straight to bed. I stayed out of people's way and slept it off. Because I'm not going to be in a foreign country drunk and then getting into bar fights. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. So in a sanitized world, there's one scenario. Okay, George, you want to get high. Whatever you did or didn't do, stay home, stay out of the public, and you'll probably be alive today. This goes out particularly to the youngins, okay? Because once you step out of the house, you need to be aware of your surroundings and alert. Sandra Bland, The Law of Cause and Effect. The police officer asked you, or maybe you interpreted it as told you, to put out your cigarette. Power was in Sandra Bland's hand at that case. Instead of saying anything, if she had put out the cigarette immediately, she might be alive today. Cause one, she didn't put it out. Cause two, when she got out of the car, there was some kickback on that. And then when you start calling men names, talking shit, not keeping your mouth shut, basically not shutting the fuck up. See, these are all causes. That's why she got carted off to jail. I'm not going to get into what happened in the jail because I don't know. And I've been pulled over my share of times like anybody else. When I get pulled over, by the time they reach my side, you know, the driver's side, I have the license, registration, and proof of insurance, and my driver's license. My window's rolled all the way down. My hand's out the window with that in my hand, so they don't even have to ask me shit. My other hand, my non-driver's hand, is on the steering wheel, already visible. And then after I hand over my paperwork, and I take my hand and then put it back on unless they give me other instructions. I remember one time somewhere in Central Florida, I was on the road all alone. The cop asked me to step outside the vehicle while he, ran the background, ran a check, routine check. And I did. No problem. I didn't ask why. I didn't become Perry Mason all of a sudden. Okay. I followed, because I know this. They want to get home just like I want to get home. So that cause and effect. So Sandra Bland, in my opinion, cause and effect. Put the cigarette out. That's the cause that she could, but she didn't do it right away. Keeping your mouth shut, she didn't do that. Being polite, you didn't do that. And once those effects come back, you don't have any power, or you have very little. Eric Gardner, same thing. Police asked him not to sell cigarettes. He kept on. Then they wanted to take him in. He didn't want to put on the cuffs. He's another one that passed away from, I'm trying to avoid to the stage of I can't breathe. What could these people have done to even, so there wouldn't have even been a situation where you're facing, getting the cuffs on. Even if you get the cuffs on, you got to flow. Now let's go to Chauvin. Chauvin is, in my opinion, based on the video, guilty as hell. Based on black letter law. This is stuff they teach in law school, or whatever. However, those 12 jurors, because see, this is another aspect of the law, which is controlled by a man. Those 12 people, they might all see it one way. It only takes one of them to hang the whole thing up. That's common law, and that goes on the books. Just like the Trayvon Martin thing, all right, it's on the books. That there'll be some future case, if there hasn't been one already that we don't know about, where stand your ground in Florida, that, you know, you can kill somebody and get away scot-free. So we don't know how it's going to go with the Chauvin case, and it's been some damning, in my opinion, very damning testimonials against Chauvin, from the fellow co-workers, the chief of police of Minneapolis, Minnesota, three expert doctors the last couple of days or so. Damning. Even without that, just on the video alone. But, once again, I'm going back to Rodney King, that first criminal trial, no conviction. The Freddie Gray case, the city coroner, or the state, whatever he called him in Maryland, the coroner, a government employee, he said he didn't die of natural causes. He was killed by another human being. But all those police officers walked. Cause and effect, that's what I'm dealing with. It's impersonal. It's just like the law of gravity. It's just like the law of electricity. But we have, in this realm of existence, we have, you know, what are the calls that you're going to make to avoid certain situations? And then if you get in a certain situation, what calls can you make or not make to stay alive? I've been threatened a couple of times, me being a landlord. And one thing I don't do is I don't get into a pissing contest with a disgruntled person, particularly if it's in front of their woman or man, or in one case, the neighborhood. What I do is essentially shut up. Let them vent. Let them have their say. And I don't say nothing. So far, that strategy has worked for me. Some people say you fight fire with fire. I disagree. The best way to fight fire is with water. My silence is the water. After they say their piece, even if we go to court in a civil action, I always let the person, and I hate to go to put somebody in court, but if I have to take somebody to small claims court or whatever, I let that person vent first, because my objective is by the time we get to court, I don't want your money. I just want you out. Let them vent, and then after that, typically with the mediators, I get my way. And the person that was doing the venting co-signs on it. So that's how that goes. But the law of cause and effect. What could, and I'm putting this podcast out here today. because it's not about right and wrong now. The laws of the universe, which is the law of cause and effect, it's the law of the universe, it's the natural law of the universe. The law of cause and effect, the law of electricity, the law of gravity, the law of aerodynamics, they have nothing to do with right or wrong. See, that's a whole nother discussion, right and wrong. The Trayvon Martin thing, the jury interpreted the law, and, you know, that's when the emotions pop in and how people were brought up and raised and philosophies and all that. It had nothing to do with right or wrong. I mean, they could have saw it as right or wrong, but the law of cause and effect is scientific. Once you get into the who's right and wrong, you know, that's subject to human interpretation. Once if I drink me a bottle of wine right now, scotch or whatever, and then I go out to 7-Eleven or the grocery store, any of the shopping centers in my little neighborhood here, and I start talking shit. See, I'm putting these causes out here. More than likely, the storekeeper or one of the employees of the store, they're going to call the police. Now, if I stay there, still talking shit, by the time the police come, I've lost all my power. So if I got to drink or get high, which I don't do any of that stuff anyway, I'm staying home. That's the best cause I can make to stay alive. I don't want to give anybody power over me that way. And in my opinion, that's what happened to George Floyd. George Floyd, whatever he did before he left that house, was on him. Then once you go out in public, okay, you're inviting, this is another law, the law of attraction, which is closely related to the law of cause and effect. You are, you got people that go out every day and do stuff and get away with it. The more he stayed in circulation and didn't, because he could have, matter of fact, had he gone back into the store that day, following the clerks, he possibly could have neutralized the situation and nobody would have called the police. Now, the clerk that took the $20 bill, who was a black man also, he says he feels kind of guilty. He says he wish he had never even called the police. But if I were talking to that kid, I'd say, look, it's not on you. George Floyd, via the law of cause and effect, he is the one who decided to venture out of the house. I'm all for prevention. I don't want to be in a situation where somebody speaking over my dead body. I don't want to be in a situation. I don't want to call causes like that create that situation. If I'm gonna get 20, and his family got $27 million, he doesn't benefit 1 ounce from it. He's not here to enjoy any of that. Anyway, let me get off my platform. George Floyd and the call. Now, once again, I'm not excusing Chauvin because he's on trial right now because of the causes that he made on being on his neck. Okay. The only thing is, I'm saying is, if he gets off scot-free, as did the, like I say, the, because what do you call it, the Freddie Gray case, none of those police officers got convicted. In the first Rodney King, the police trial of the Rodney King thing, those cops, matter of fact, if it hadn't been for the L.A. riots and an election year, I don't believe there would have been a. I don't believe that trial would have been bumped up to the federal level. George Bush won. Was the one that, via politics, had the federal, the feds come in on that one. In any event, let's go to the phone lines here. 407, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A. Thank you for that long introduction. I watched a video of the clerk testifying and them showing the drama show in the store. And that two questions I have from this theatrical performance we're watching. The whole thing to me is theater, because who sits around in their car waiting for the store employees or the manager to come out and accuse you of stealing or using a $20 fake bill? That was what was clear in the testimony of this clerk, that George Floyd sat in his car outside the store for some period of time before the police even showed up. Nobody told him to sit there and wait for the police. Nobody said, you got to stay here because you're being accused. They were just going back and forth saying, okay, can you come in the store because we think we got a counterfeit 20. No, I'm not coming in the store. Who does that? If that were me, I would have driven off and said, adios, people, I'm done with you. No, he stays there. This is why this is, to me, just theater. All of this is what may be a false flag.
Remember,
you
was hired.
It was election year.
He might not have been in any condition to drive.
Okay, so that's all the more reason why this is. There's lots of questions here. Why you got three people in the car with you, and nobody could drive off after... Who sits in a car after somebody comes out of a store and say, could you come inside? We think we have a $20 counterfeit bill. No, I'm not going to come inside, but I'm going to sit here and wait for you to come out and ask me again. Okay, you sit there, somebody comes out, asks you again, can you please come in? My manager wants you to come in. No, I'm not going to go inside, but I'm going to sit here and wait for the police. Who does that? That doesn't even make sense. The other question I have is, what drugs was Chauvin on? That's the issue in my mind. Well, from the video we've all seen with his knee in his neck, that man was on some kind of drug. Human beings just don't behave that way unless you're on meth or cocaine or something. To just stare into a camera for 9 minutes with your knee in somebody's neck. Chauvin was obviously on a drug or
Well, Chauvin was, I mean, there are plenty of cases where somebody's been on somebody's neck. And now, the only thing is now, 2021, it's on video now.
Why would you do that, though? Why? That's what I'm saying. What drug was Chauvin on? Because
in
human beings don't behave
like
that.
Here's my take on it, and I can't prove it. In my opinion, Chauvin probably had done that a gazillion times and gotten away with it. Nobody died. This time, somebody died, and it was on video.
Okay, you're on a drug of some. You got to be on a drug of some kind. PTSD.
Well, were they on drugs when they lynched black folks? Were they on drugs?
Yes, mental illness. Mental illness has always been around. Yes, they were all mentally ill. Okay. So that's why I'm saying, to me, the two questions are, number one, why did Floyd sit in his car after two times he was asked to come in the store? Why didn't he drive off? A normal person, and we know he was drugged from the video, he was on something.
I wouldn't drive off. I would go back in.
But that's what I mean. You either go back in and deal with the situation or you leave. Why would you hang around and wait for the police to come? This was all theater, in my opinion. I believe this is a false flag.
If he was, because I don't know, if he was drunk or high, you don't know what a person do in an altered state.
Well, I think this is all a false flag, in my personal opinion. I've seen the false flag they create, especially in the year election year. It's political. They create these situations to divide and conquer. That's what they did, stir up the racism. You stir up the racism, people are going to move away from the Republican Party because they think the Democrats are the saviors, and there are no racists in the Democratic Party, right? So this is all theater. It continues to be theater.
Well,
and it's
all right,
another
distraction. We're talking about the law of cause and effect, okay? Sole purpose.
Right, right.
Now, in your opinion, your sons are grown. You've raised two black men. What could, in your opinion, George Floyd have done to even avoid all of this?
Well, number one, if you're taking drugs, which he obviously has a history of taking drugs, you have an altered state of mind. So that was number one. You have to be preventive these days about your health. Prevent sickness, mental illness, and all that, because the system is going to take full advantage of you, especially the...
So in other words, you're saying he shouldn't have taken what he had taken and then leave the house.
So deep, L.A. It's not...
I mean, cause and effect?
Yeah, but it's deep. Why do people need to take drugs in the first place? That's where it starts, because you can't say he shouldn't have taken drugs. Well, if he's in a state of mind of depression or anxiety... First of all, deal with your health challenges so you don't need to take drugs. So then if you're not dealing with your health challenges, some people take drugs.
They can... Hello, you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people take drugs, I don't know. Let's say he woke up depressed that day. Maybe he took a drug or drank, I don't know, a fifth of scotch in hopes of feeling better. That's a cause and effect relationship, too.
Okay, but he's had they got a video of him on drugs in 2019. So this isn't his first drug experience. This man is an addict, obviously. He must be an addict. So you're talking about, we're talking about answering the question of cause and effect based on one incident where you're talking about an addict is involved in this one incident. So the first thing is, why is he addicted to drugs? Obviously addicted to drugs from his history that they've shown. 2019, he was arrested, blah. He's had a history of addiction. So the cause and effect question is, why are you addicted to drugs? That's the cause and effect issue. And then why is Chauvin doing what he's doing on some type of substance where you would think you have to put your knee on somebody for not? He's got a mental illness, too. They both had mental illness. So it'll be interesting to see how this drama plays out. It's just a distraction for everybody. Let's stir up some more racism. We need some more racist energy here in the planet. So this is all theater, in my opinion. Get the popcorn out. Watch this show. And then learn the lessons, like you're doing here, teaching us the lessons about the law of the universe and making decisions. Number one, to heal your addictions, because obviously this is about addictions and making choices that you stay around and wait. This is a drama show. I think they put on a show with George Floyd and Chauvin, because I don't know who in their right mind would sit in a car.
You have George Floyd, before George Floyd, you have a whole – oh, it's Friday right now. They're going to be people. They're going to get their paycheck today during this pandemic or no pandemic, and they're going to go out to happy hour and get happy. Most people, it will be an uneventful day or weekend. Some people, due to the fact that they drank too much at happy hour, might end up in jail tonight. Cause and effect.
But you can believe, L.A., because this is getting international press, there was no accident. This is something called false flags. If you look, there's a documentary on Netflix about false flags. We see them all the time, but we don't recognize it as that. But these are planned events with actors, who are stimulating racism, division, and all the other things they want to
Let's say this event with these players, and it was with George Floyd and Chauvin, this specific. But that, once again, every day there are people that have too much to drink or pop too many pills, get into something, and the police are called. And sometimes that police call goes left. That happens every day. It's just not publicized. That's what I'm talking about, the law of cause and effect. What can we do to prevent negative effects? That's what I'm talking about.
First of all, learn how they're going to capitalize on racism and division in situations like this. So you want to keep your life clean and healthy and stay away from this influence of the media, because this is an event that's getting too much attention, which tells you there's something else going on here. There are thousands of events that happen like this. Like you said, Sean has probably done this to more than one individual. Why is this case getting all this attention? Because it was a political year for one, and now they got more agendas going to divide and conquer, distract us. They want to distract the hell out of people because they're busy trying to inject people with poison, and they're going to do whatever they can to cause more division and less unity.
Okay,
so we don't get
let me
that.
Ask
we're
you
gonna
this.
Keep calling
let me ask you this. You and your husband or ex-husband, okay, you two raised boys to men. What did you two do so that your sons would not come back or be hemmed up by the police because they were too drunk or unruly or whatever? What did you two teach? What causes did you guys teach them so they won't make causes that will get them into trouble like this?
Okay, so because both my ex and I had alcoholic parents growing up, we chose not to have that in our house, for one. That was not a beverage.
Right, that's one cause. Okay, good.
So we promoted healthy parenting in the household. So I stayed in that marriage, even though it wasn't the most harmonious marriage. I stayed in that marriage while my sons were young because I knew we wanted them to have healthy parent examples. So that's number one. You don't have that these days. Women are getting divorced quicker. And all that because it's not comfortable to stay in relationships that are not harmonious and whatever. So number one, we stayed together. We didn't have the influence of drugs or alcohol in the house, and we promoted education on every level. And another thing, because we could travel all over the world, we traveled a lot with my son. So they got to experience different cultures, different people. We were in neighborhoods that were diverse. So all of those things contributed to my son being now very balanced.
That's what I'm saying today. Had George Floyd, now I don't know his background, but I'm just saying cause and effect. You know, what cause can we put out there that we can control? Because if we put out certain causes, okay, if a person wants to drink and get high, great if you want to do that. All I'm saying is once you step outside into another environment and you interact with other people, you know, then those effects that come back, a lot of times you might not have control, and that's what happened to him.
Yeah.
A whole lot of people probably got told the same thing the same day all over the country or all over the globe. But somebody called the police, and then when the police showed up, see, then his power of choice and selection quickly diminished.
What I'm putting out there is,
what could he, Sandra Bland, what could these people have done? I don't want to give power to anybody where they can put their knee on my neck. I don't want to be in a position where if I am smoking, if police told me, I don't want to give that person that much power. That's too much power over my life for me. What causes can we take control of so we won't get hemmed up like that?
Right, but you're an educated man, and these people we're talking about, George Floyd, his buddies, probably not as educated as you are. So that's part of the problem there, too, education, experience, traveling, having diverse friendships growing up. All of that plays into it, but it's complicated, and this is all theater. So we just got to watch the show and learn the lesson. So thank you for teaching this lesson today, L.A.
Well, we're all teaching. 347, thank you for the feedback, Beata. 347, your mic is open. George Floyd and the Law of Cause and Effect.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Good. Hotep Kenyatta calling. The issues the black-brown community faces, not just of our doing, so whether we go and get a university degree or we dropped out of high school and smoke weed, it doesn't excuse the racism and police brutality that we face. We could have degrees and behave ourselves and encounter racism and brutality. So the question is, where does the racism and brutality come that causes the whole cause and effect ripple? Because even on the plantation, it wouldn't have been fair to put the responsibility on the slave. The responsibility is really the villain that changes the dynamic of peaceful coexistence and chokes black people and shoots black people and doesn't hire black people and pays us less money. That is really where the BS starts for the community.
Okay. Well, based on law of cause and effect, what do you think George Floyd could have done that day to avoid the situation that he ended up in?
Well, it seems as though the white racist guy had an issue from the job that they worked. I saw that in several sources. And so I don't know what he could have done. He seemed to be compliant, you know. He wasn't physically trying to attack them. He was just a bit nervous. Fight or flight, our system automatically in humans when we feel threatened, you know, hormones are released. So I don't know of anything he could have done. However, you are right in that had he not had some previous negative experiences, possibly things could have gone better. But it's very difficult to second guess when we live in a system that tends to be a caste system with the darker complexioned humans at the bottom, and we're trying to calculate all, okay, should I go left? A cop is coming. Should I hold my right hand up? You know, it's very difficult. We really have to ask police and their psychosis and their psychopathy so that we can live like regular people. I'm not suggesting do drugs, but, you know, there are a lot of people that do drugs. It's not supposed to be an execution. It's supposed to be either treatment or maybe jail time. But at the weed situation, black folks were selling weed, going to jail, getting shot. Other people now, Becky has come in and she's opening weed spots. So it's a quandary that we face.
So can I ask a question? Okay, it sounds like what he's saying, thank you, brother, for your viewpoint. Sounds like you're saying that black folks are just victims and there's really not a lot they can do to affect the consequences of their choices. Is that what I hear you saying? Black people are victims of a racist system and there's not a lot they can do to avoid the consequences of what happened to George Floyd.
No, in some cases, there are things that we could try to do not to, you know, do illegal drugs and get ourselves in a mindset that leads to being called. But even in those cases, white people aren't just killed like that. But on the bigger picture, our American and our European and our Saudi Arabian systems have darker people at the bottom systemically. What we need to do is come together more and learn more about our original cultures and languages and Yoruba and some of our original spiritual systems and Kemet Egypt that everyone else took from, and they're still taking from Africa right now in our cell phones. So, yes, there's a lot we can do, but there's no doubt that the system itself is not structured for us to succeed, and we won't succeed until we start coming together and evaluating the problems, looking at resources at our disposal, and working cohesively. It's very difficult because we divided on religion, gender, who's sleeping with who's light skin. You know, there's so many ways we're split, but I do believe some of what's going on a false flag operations to distract us, but it's not mutually exclusive. It doesn't mean that they're not legitimate cases. It just means that the system uses our pain and distracts us from other things that they're also trying to push. Don't forget, they have CIA, FBI, they have Mossad, they have millions of dollars invested in budget to mess up psychological warfare, germ warfare, you know, and we have, I don't see any one entity to evaluate and analyze all these problems so we can get the common sense and figure it out. But hopefully one day we can come together more and solve the problems. Until then, we'll see more George Floyds and Sandra Bland's and extraction of wealth and finances from the Caribbean, Africa, and South America.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate your comment. Let's go to the next caller here, area code 410, George Floyd and the law of cause and effect. What's your comment?
Hotep, brothers and sisters, how you doing?
We're good.
Hotep.
All right. It's been a while since I've been able to call. After listening to all of your comments, Brother L.A., and how you doing, Sister Beata? Your voice is a fresh breath air on this channel.
Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks.
All righty. Brother L.A., I don't mean to be graphic, but based on some of the comments I heard you express, sounds like you have just been pulled out of the womb last night. And I say that, I don't mean to be, graphic, but if you look back at history,
mm-hmm.
and look at all of the interactions that blacks have had with white folk, and I'm gonna cut right straight to the chase. George Floyd, the only way he could have avoided, and all the rest of the people you named could have avoided, being in the situation they were in, they would have to be born again. And when I say born again, they would have to be born again of blonde hair, blue eyes, and white skin.
Oh,
and I'm going to give you this because, listen, I just looked at television this morning, and a white boy went into his place of employment, shot up the place, killed a person, and shot a policeman. And guess what? They took him alive. And you see case after case where these white boys would go in and shoot up a place, kill policemen, and raise hell and do everything. And they don't suffer the fate that George Floyd's and the Eric Gardner's and that young man down there in South Carolina, Trayvon Martin, and everybody else. Now, you got some idiots out there saying, well, you know what, they do that to white folks too, but not on a consistent basis. You have hundreds of thousands of cases where white policemen are confronted with unruly, arrogant, they resist police and they take their time de-escalating the situation. And I'm going to give you a case in point, January the 6th. Ain't no way in the hell a bunch of black folks could have gone up there and done what they did in Washington, D.C., and you didn't have a rash of arrests and some killings and getting some heads beat. Now, you can't convince me of that. And look, you're a conservative. You believe in the rule of law. You can't tell me that black folks could have gone up there and done that and suffered and not suffered the consequences. So now,
Beasley, you're right. There's definitely a double standard. But let's go with the back to the law of cause and effect. Now, knowing that there is a double standard in our man-made world here. I've been stopped at least four times when I've done some long highway driving, and it irritates. In photo, matter of fact, and I wasn't given a ticket citation or nothing like that. It bothers me. So what I started to do is, you know what, I'm going to jump on a Greyhound or Amtrak or take a plane. I'm going to let somebody else do the driving. And, God, I haven't stopped 20 years from me now. That way I have peace of mind traveling, because I don't want something to go left if I'm doing solo and I've driven from here to the other countries. So I already know. You're right. I'm not denying there's a double standard. I'm just saying, knowing that there's a double standard, how can I use the law of cause and effect? So I have, if I want to go from here to Chicago, okay, I can get in the car and drive solo, but you know what? I feel better if I take another cause and get on a bus. Well, for me, I'll take a plane. That's the last time I went to Chicago, I took a plane. Take a plane, let somebody else do the driving, and I ain't got to worry about the state troopers. I ain't got to worry about Barney Fife pulling me over or nothing like that. That's how I handle it. But you're right. I already know that there's a double standard. But what can I do using the law of cause and effect to dramatically decrease my chances of getting hemmed up?
Like I said before, Brother Elliot, you just got pulled out of the womb last night. There's nothing you can do. You can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Look, you being a black male, based on what the last caller just told you, mm-hmm. and based on how this society is structured, you have a 50-50 chance of getting your butt kicked or killed. And it doesn't have to do with anything that you've done. You've been extremely blessed. I don't say lucky. You've been extremely blessed that you didn't run into somebody that had a bad day, whether they're black or white. Because, look, this system, this society has really rigged the system against black folk. And the thing is, you got some black people that is just as racist on behalf of, is just as white in their thoughts as black people. They can come in there and kill you because you're black. They've been trained that black lives don't matter. So the thing is, yeah, you've been blessed. Now, the thing is,
Nipsey Hussle last year?
He got killed
in broad daylight by another black person.
It happens all the time, Chicago, New York, North Carolina, Florida, you name it. I'm just telling you now, this society has structured it that, hey, look, black lives don't matter. You can go out there and kill a nigger anytime you want to for any reason you want to. And the thing is, yeah, you've been stopped. Yeah, you've encountered some situations and you've gotten out of it. But you've been extremely blessed. And the tricky is this. You're trying to go in and you're trying to excuse the way the society has its actions according to the way you interrelate with black folk. Now, let me give you this. You say, well, now you can stay in the house. Well, hell, there was a guy in Dallas, right? He was in the house looking at TV eating ice cream. White girl goes in there and shoots
well,
him and kills
now,
him.
You got me on that one. That case... You got me on that one. That was a very bizarre case. I can't even put the law of cause and effect on that one. And there was another case in Texas where the guy was – oh, hold on. Who got you? There was another case in Dallas that was – oh, the neighbor called to ask for a welfare check on one of his neighbors. It was somebody that he knew. And it was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and he called the police for a welfare check because the front door was propped open. So it was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. So the policeman that went over, who was supposed to do a welfare check, that policeman ended up killing the woman who actually lived there. That's another bizarre case. So I can't use the law of cause. I can't explain neither one of those cases.
Let me try and explain it.
Because
Beasley is missing, you're missing the soul energy. I just did a show, 2-hour show, about how this body we live in is a vessel of the soul. Most people don't believe like that. This body is my body. I do what I want with it. I can smoke dope. I can drink alcohol. I can do whatever I want. It's my body. That's the way most people think. But if you lift your elevation of your belief system to this is the vessel of the soul, your soul carries karmic energy. And that the things that happen that you don't understand, why are black people getting killed? Why is this happening? Why are black people getting lynched? Blah, blah, blah. your soul carries energy from a past life. But if you don't believe that, you're saying, well, this isn't fair. People are suffering. White people are getting killed by police more than black people, actually. But the media highlights those situations that will promote racism because that's what they do. They want division in the media. So if you don't understand something, it's because you're not looking at soul journey that carries energy from past lives. But that's my belief system. I don't have a question about why things happen like you're asking, because I understand in my belief that the soul carries energy from life to life to life. And if somebody has an event that happens to them in this life, and you say, well, that's just terrible, that's racist, that's blah, 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 blah. Well, the soul has reaped that energy from a past life. My father lived 95 years on this planet. He's a black man from the Jim Crow South, experienced all kinds of hatred, but he never had any of those experiences you just talked about that all these black people are experiencing. Why did that happen? His soul was so pure, so ready for a new experience that all he had to do was keep making choices of consciousness, of compassion, of love. And his life was just beautiful for 95 years. Black man from Jim Crow South. So it's all about understanding the journey of the soul. And then you stop asking all these questions. Until then, you're like, well, everybody's racist, and I don't know why that happened, and blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, you keep that up. Suffering is going to keep coming, and you'll be questioning everything. But you can have peace if you start looking at the soul's journey as creating different events to complete the karmic and the cause-effect energy. That's just one way to look at it, but you can choose to look at it another way and believe everybody's racist and everybody wants to get the black man killed.
Let me put this out here. I don't know the ages of everybody. I'm 63. Okay. Different people have different experiences. I've never had to, and Viotti, you probably never had to either. I never, other than in a picture book and a history book, when I took a drinking water out of a water fountain, I never had to drink out of a colored water fountain or go to a colored bathroom. The closest I've ever, what I would call racism experience, was when I was in second grade. I was at my aunt and uncle's house in New Orleans, and it was a Sunday night, and somebody threw a brick through the front window saying, "Niggas, get out." Now, I couldn't comprehend that. It took me some years to comprehend that. But looking back on it, my aunt and uncle were the first black couple to move into an all-white neighborhood. Later on, all the white folks moved out or whatever. So that's about my only experience with racism. So your experiences, Beasley, like, you know, you've got a whole lot more than I've got, probably. I don't know your age or experience or whatever. So,
but,
go ahead, I'm listening.
Brother Elliot, see, that's where we black folk get it twisted. You're talking about a personal experience. Sister Viana is talking about a personal experience. We're talking about a society here. We're talking about a system that is structured to say black lives don't matter. See, this thing here, just because you have an experience, we're talking about the possibility of you coming in contact with something because it's a systematic way, just like the guy told you, a caste system or ever what have you. These people have been conditioned over hundreds of years to say a nigger ain't feces, ain't shit. And you ain't supposed to take no shit off of a nigger. And they ain't supposed to give you no back talk. And the thing is, they have been taught, and you know we can go with this thing again, racism is survival of the fittest. And self-preservation. And we think just because it doesn't happen to us as an individual, that it's not a systematic way of dealing with the way this country and the laws are structured. That's just like You go into court, they know you're innocent, or either they don't have any proof that you're guilty, and 12 white jurors will say, well, you know, they'll pick 12 white jurors and say, hey, you know what, we're gonna deal with this. Down
well,
in South Carolina,
right. That happened with Emmett Till, it happened with Rodney King on the first criminal trial. It happened with, two or three years ago with the case in Baltimore, Freddie Gray. And it might happen with this one in Minnesota.
You can go on and on and on and on. And that's what I'm trying to get across to you. Now, let me give you this one. This Scott guy that got shot in the back, everybody saw the video.
Yeah.
And they know that this cop had planted some bogus evidence beside the body. The white jury hung that decision both times. And the only way that he could get out of it was they took it. The federal government was going to go in and charge him with civil rights violation, which is the death penalty. So he said, "Well, look, I'm going to keep it on the state side, and I'm going to plead guilty." But I'm just showing you case after case after case, and for you not to think that, hey, look, wait a minute, you know, just because it didn't happen to me, that, you know, this system is, you can't say that.
I'm a co-sign on everything you're saying, but my question is this. Knowing that, okay, that we got a flawed system, double standard on it, what can we do, particularly as black men, particularly the young black men, what can we do using the law of cause and effect to not even to decrease our chances of getting hemmed up like that? That's all I'm asking.
You do the best you can knowing all of what you just said, because, look, it's a 50-50 chance that it can happen to you. And I'm going to give you this year for all of these naysayers, man. You know, it don't happen to Africans that come over here or people from the Caribbean. I'm going to do Diallo and this other guy. They were Africans, come over here. He was minding his own business. They told him to pull out his wallet. They shot him 47 times. And the other guy, he was a Haitian, and they placed him with a plunger. But if you black, it doesn't matter. You do the best you can in a system that you know is rigged against you. That's all you can do. Now, you can come up with all of these theories and all of these other things you want to, but the basic point of it is that black lives ain't supposed to matter in this country. That's the bottom line. Now, you can go and philosophize all you want to, but that's the basic. And look, black folks have a problem dealing with that. That's reality. And you can go through history and look at it. I mean, everything I'm saying, and I'm going to end on this. There was a girl babysitting in one of these cases, and the police went there and peeked through the window. I guess they were calling on a case or something. She was in there babysitting, and they shot her in her own house. So now this thing about you stay in the house to be safe, that don't work with us. When they go in a black neighborhood, they go in there guns blazing and asking questions later. And the thing is, they've trained black men to do the same thing that white men do to you. We're just as brutal against one another as they are, because they've been trained that, hey, look, black lives don't matter. So now you can go ahead and philosophize it all you want to. And you can try and paint it with rose-colored glasses if you want to. But that's just a basic fact. You can't get around that. And I'd like to hear what somebody else got. And look, karma has nothing to do with this. Karma has nothing. Past life, if you look at past life, all you got to do is go back in history. And all of this is brought forward. If you want to go into past life, hell, you can go case after case where black people have been brutalized in this country and in this system and in the world, for that matter. And the thing is, it keeps happening over and over and over again because, number one, we haven't figured out how to deal with self-preservation and survival of the fittest. Because, look, we're dealing with animals here, and we're animals. And the strong survive. And they always take advantage of the weak. Let's face it. That's what it is. Basically,
well, that's cause and effect, too. like you just said, we need to figure out some things. 314, your mic is open.
Kelly, it's a shame
that
you had to bear all this ridiculous damn ridicule for some idiot. I ain't going to say that they're idiots, but they put out these idiot excuses about the topic. And I sent you a whole lot of links on black males killing white police officers, even down south, ambushing them, standing over their body, pumping bullets in them. I didn't see no whites marching and riding and tearing up stuff. I sent you some information on Alton Sterling. His criminal record on the parking lot, brandishing guns, threatening people. Read that. And as far as karma is concerned, it must be, because look what happened to his 20-year-old son, raping 2 8-year-old boys. Nobody hear nothing about that. I mean, did you hear anything about that?
I didn't.
Oh, my goodness. And guess what? The blacks that shot and killed and murdered those white police officers in Baton Rouge, they was taken alive in the South. Isn't that something? There's another story of a black cop shooting and killing a white woman because she called him the N-word. He didn't go to jail. So, you know, this stuff about people doing the thing. And, you know, here's another thing. Who hires the police?
Taxpayers.
Right. Who hires the police in Ferguson?
Black folks.
People. Absolutely.
People.
Ferguson was 70% black, and they were happy with their police because their police was protecting their property and interests and values. The blacks that fled North St. Louis, I dare anybody try to argue with me over this. I know this very, very well. And that's saying that it's only blacks. It happens in all ethnic groups, but let's talk about blacks because everybody wants to say that they have some shadow over their head. Blacks that fled North St. Louis back in the 60s because of crime, deterioration in property values, and you know what happens to the grass when some things walk on it.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the outskirts of the city of St. Louis, which happened to be one city called Ferguson, and they moved in. And whites was moving out for whatever reason, maybe age, and the kids didn't want to live in that area, which I don't blame them. My daughter stays about 5 miles from there on 5 acres, and I'm getting her from out of there because we see what's going on. So they bought homes, had nice homes, was